surgery teams managed to adapt to a new technology that disrupted their profession. They shifted from open-heart surgery to a new method, minimally invasive cardiac surgery, while others struggled to do so. The successful adopters first embraced the redesign because they understood minimally invasive surgery for what it was, a radical departure from traditional surgery. By contrast, unsuccessful teams that couldn't cross over to the new surgical method regarded it as simply an extension of existing methods. Second, the successful teams looped their learning. They held trials and incorporated feedback from team members. Unsuccessful teams did so sparingly or not at all and didn't meet to solicit feedback. High performers in our study embraced a similar two-part approach. They scored very high on both the redesign and the learning loop practices. Those who mastered both redesign and looping placed in the top 83rd performance percentile, compared to only the 23rd percentile for those who did neither. To position yourself to succeed in a changing work environment, start by confronting the facts. Don't ignore reality and write off the new technology or emerging trend as a minor fad. If you're a teacher, accept that online education will disrupt your profession and embrace corresponding changes in your daily work. Then, apply the learning loop to keep on making yourself better little by little. Redesign and loop. Of course, that kind of intense, sustained effort to redesign work and learn requires a terrific degree of motivation. How do the greatest performers stay energized and enthusiastic? What drives them to keep on changing and improving day after day, year after year? That's the topic to which we now turn. Key insights. The learning loop. The work harder convention. We need 10,000 hours of practice to master a job skill. Practice, repetition, makes perfect. The new work smarter perspective. It isn't how many hours you practice, it's how you learn. And that how differs in the workplace from the deliberate practice pursued by athletes and musicians. The best performers at work implement the learning loop in which the quality and not the quantity of each iteration matters most. Key points. Statistical analysis of our 5,000-person data set showed that people who applied the learning loop performed much better than those who didn't. To learn well at work, we must overcome important challenges that people don't face when trying to master skills in sports, music, chess, and memory tests, the areas where most research on deliberate practice has been conducted. The learning loop is an approach to learning while you perform your daily work. You try out a new approach in a small way, for example, how you ask a question in a meeting, then measure the outcome, then get quick feedback, then tweak your approach based on that feedback. For example, ask the question differently. You can deploy 6 tactics to implement the learning loop in your job. 1. Carve out just 15. 2. Chunk it. 3. Measure the soft. 4. Get nimble feedback fast. 5. Dig the dip. 6. Confront the stall point. Effective learners break an overarching skill into micro-behaviors. They are small, concrete actions you take on a daily basis to improve a skill. The action shouldn't take more than 15 minutes to perform and review, and it should have a clear impact on skill development. How do you thrive in your career even when technological and other disruptions threaten to render traditional job skills obsolete? Combine the learning loop with redesign. Chapter 3. Five. P squared. Passion and purpose. What counts in life is not the mere fact that we have lived. It is what difference we have made to the lives of others that will determine the significance of the life we lead. Nelson Mandela. In 2008, on a brilliantly sunny day in Palo Alto, California, Oprah Winfrey delivered a soaring commencement address to Stanford's graduating class. Recounting her own rise to wealth and stardom, she lauded the role of emotion and listening to your gut, the importance of making sure you feel passionate about your job choices. "When you're doing the work you're meant to do," she said to the 25,000 people assembled in the stadium, "it feels right and every day is a bonus, regardless of what you're getting paid." And then she delivered the punchline. "So I say to you, forget about the fast lane. If you really want to fly, just harness your power to your passion. Honor your calling. Everybody has one. Trust your heart, and success will come to you." Motivational speakers, self-help gurus, successful entrepreneurs, human resource executives, and branding experts have all talked up passion. So much that you might believe loving what you do is the only requirement to perform at your best. Think of Southwest Airlines and its slogan, "The Airline That Love Built." Or Richard Branson's remark, "Since 80% of your life is spent working, you should start your business around something that is a passion." A Huffington Post blog summed up what has become a mantra for our age. The key to success, loving what you do. But is passion really the key to success? As many a failed actor in Los Angeles will tell you, following your passion can lead to unemployment. Success stories like Oprah's are nice, but they're also misleading. Stanford doesn't invite unsuccessful people or struggling alumni up on the podium. Only the super successful, like Oprah Winfrey, get to tell swooning crowds that they have followed their passion. As the well-known venture capitalist Mark Andreessen tweeted, "The problem is that we do not hear from people who have failed to become successful by doing what they love." It's possible that passion played a role in making Oprah successful, but it also may have played a role in preventing countless others from reaching their full potential. Had freelancer David Sobel been in the audience for Oprah's Stanford address, he might have held his applause. As Sobel recounted in a Salon article, he labored for years at a respected social policy research organization, formatting reports from his perch in a windowless office. Then at age 42, having seen economics professor Larry Smith deliver a popular TED talk about following one's passion, he decided to make his move. He quit his job and threw himself into a new career, one he thought he'd love. "I was determined to rebrand myself as a digital copywriter." Rather than finding a successful, enriching career, Sobel suffered through months of unemployment. No matter what he did, he couldn't find work. To pay for health care, he cashed in his retirement savings and begged money from his parents. He found and then lost a job working at a doggy daycare. Eventually, he landed in a mental hospital where he sat in group therapy sessions with addicts. "I never should have followed my dreams," Sobel concludes. The advice to follow your passion, in other words, letting your passion dictate what you do, can be dangerous. But what's the alternative? Ignoring your passion isn't so great either. It leads people to plod along, doing dull, empty work to earn a paycheck. In a commencement address delivered at Maharishi University of Management, comedian Jim Carrey recounted that his father might have been a talented comedian, but he had feared failure. He chose the safe route, accounting, only to lose his job when Carrey was 12, leaving his family in dire straits. "I learned many great lessons from my father," Carrey reflected, "not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want, so you might as well take a chance on doing what you love." Applause. Sadness crossed Carrie's face as he recalled how his father achieved neither financial stability nor passion. We've been thinking about passion in our careers all wrong. Some of us believe we should follow our passion regardless of our chances of success. Others among us assume we must pursue a career and earn safe money irrespective of whether it taps into our passion. Neither of these options is very attractive, and as a result, many of us bounce between the two, unsure of what to do, groping for the best way forward. Is there a solution to this trade-off between following or ignoring passion? Yes. Our research uncovered a third option, matching. Some people pursue passion in navigating their careers, but they also manage to connect this passion with a clear sense of purpose on the job. They contribute, serve others, make a difference. They have matched passion with purpose. Let's be clear what we mean by passion and purpose. To be passionate about work is to feel energized by it, to experience a sense of excitement and enthusiasm. For some, passion is a quiet inner sense of satisfaction and contentment. For others, it's a louder, let's go kind of thrill. As for purpose, scholars and self-help gurus have advised that we organize our lives around contributing to the well-being of society. Yet that's an overly narrow view of purpose. It can also mean creating value for an organization, as defined in Chapter 3. Just because you're not saving kids in Africa or helping homeless people on the streets of Chicago doesn't mean your job lacks purpose. Our study led us to define purpose more broadly. You have a sense of purpose when you make valuable contributions to others, individuals or organizations, or to society that you find personally meaningful and that don't harm anyone. Purpose and passion are not the same. Passion is do what you love, while purpose is do what contributes. Purpose asks, what can I give the world? Passion asks, what can the world give me? It's possible to experience a strong sense of purpose in a job and not feel deeply passionate about it, and vice versa. Teresa, a 43-year-old biomedical engineer in our study, had worked for a large orthopedic medical device company in Boston, Massachusetts, for 10 years. Her job was to test products to get data that could then be used for Food and Drug Administration clearance. While Teresa reported a strong degree of purpose, scoring a 6 out of the maximum 7 on making societal contributions, she didn't report feeling very excited about her job. She scored only a 2 for passion. Teresa contributed, but didn't love what she was doing. By contrast, Marianne, a lean Six Sigma black belt program manager, loved her work doing continuous improvement projects at a consumer electronics company. Yet she derived no larger meaning from what she was doing. She was deeply passionate, scoring a 6, but felt no strong sense of purpose, scoring only a 1. Teresa and Marianne both would have benefited from matching passion and purpose. Our statistical analysis of 5,000 people shows that people who match passion with purpose perform much better on average than those who lack either purpose or passion or both. Of the 7 factors in this book that predict performance, high levels of both passion and purpose, P squared, as I call it, was the 2nd most important one, predicting a boost in a person's percentile rank of 18 points compared with a similar person who had neither passion nor purpose. People who had just one of the 2, passion but no purpose or purpose but no passion, scored lower on performance. The key, therefore, is to infuse your work with both passion and purpose, to aim for P squared. P squared and performance. Why is matching passion and purpose so effective? I initially believed that it enhanced performance simply by spurring people to work longer hours. After all, if you love what you're doing and find it purposeful, wouldn't you hit the office earlier and leave later than anyone else? Our data squashed that explanation. Among our 5,000 participants, we found that people who scored high on passion and purpose worked an average 50 hours per week, compared to 43 hours for those who scored low. 7 hours more isn't trivial, but it isn't that much either. Passion and purpose didn't compel people to pour 70 or 80 hours into their jobs. Our analysis also revealed that those additional 7 hours of work didn't enhance performance much, only 1.5%. We had stumbled upon a mystery. Why did passion and purpose correlate with performance? To resolve it, we dug deeper into our case studies. Genevieve Gay, a study participant, is a concierge at Auberge Saint-Antoine, a luxury hotel in Quebec City in Canada. Most of the time, Genevieve fields routine requests from well-heeled guests. Restaurant recommendations, theater tickets, insider shopping tips. But on one wintry morning in 2010, a documentary photographer called. She was staying at the hotel, and she wanted to photograph a couple of dozen hard-to-find objects that represented the region's unique people and culture. Could Genevieve help? Most concierges would have brushed off the request, directing the photographer to a souvenir store to snag snow globes, keychains, and, trust me, I'm Canadian, t-shirts. Not Genevieve. During the several days of the photographer's stay, Genevieve took field trips around Quebec City hunting for objects. She came back with a stuffed snowy owl, brown bear claws right and left, a gramophone horn, an old mirror, a wooden fish, and a little wooden house. She even hunted down a specimen of the local Cecropia butterfly, with its distinctive bands of vibrant orange and red. To obtain a Cecropia, she had to make a few phone calls, eventually chasing down a researcher at nearby Laval University who lent a few specimens and hand-delivered them. Hunting down stuffed owls went well beyond Genevieve's job specification. So what drove her to mount such an intense effort? Genevieve told me that she becomes enthusiastic and engaged when interacting with guests. It isn't just another job to her. I love to improve the lives of others with my personal touch. This job gives me a chance to meet a lot of people from everywhere around the world without having to move from my desk, and I have direct impact. I can see directly what I gave, even with simple things like a restaurant that worked for them. When I asked Genevieve what her profession meant to her, she described it as a great love story. She mentioned the word care time and again. I care about my guests. Caring comes with energy, and the energy you project, you get back from guests. Many hotel staffers drift between postings, using their jobs to fund their educations. Not Genevieve. Helping guests is her calling. By the time we spoke, she had worked as a concierge for 9 years. Her boss had promoted her to chef concierge at the hotel and rated her as a top performer in our study. She had also become recognized in her profession, having gained admittance to Les Clés d'Or, the Golden Keys, an international association of concierges dedicated to make the impossible possible. Earning a spot in Les Clés d'Or is some accomplishment. Genevieve had to pass a slew of tests, among them a special trial in which she had to impress 6 mystery guests sent to judge her. Genevieve's passion, I love interacting with people, served a purpose, helping and caring for hotel guests. Unlike so many of us, she found magic in her career, landing in that special place where passion and purpose overlap. As a result, Genevieve brought a higher level of intensity to her work. She charged out of bed each morning, eager to get to her hotel. Once there, she greeted guests warmly and did everything she could to make their stay memorable, even when she was tired and cold on a dark January morning in icy Quebec. Yes, she tapped into her natural talents, and yes, she worked long hours. Both contributed to her success. But it was the energy she brought to her work, born from her sense of passion and purpose, that allowed her to excel. What's the real magic of P-squared? It provides people with more energy that they channel into their work. Not more hours as in the work harder paradigm, but more energy per hour of work. That's working smart. Analyzing our data, we discovered a strong association between intensity of effort and having both passion and purpose. We performed an additional analysis called structural equation modeling, where we disentangled 2 types of effort, the number of hours worked per week and the effort during those hours. The analysis showed that passion and purpose strongly predict effort during working hours, and not the number of hours worked per week. Other studies confirm this finding. A study of 509 employees in an insurance company showed that those who were passionate about their job channeled more energy to their working hours. They were more absorbed in job tasks. When I am working, I am completely engrossed in my work, and paid much higher attention to their tasks. Being absorbed and paying attention, in turn, improved employees' performance. If you love what you do, you'll show up with a certain amount of vigor. And if you also feel that you're helping other people, that they need you and depend on your contributions, your motivation to excel becomes that much greater. You're targeting your efforts toward making contributions to your purpose. As our study shows, you activate positive emotions such as joy, excitement, pride, inspiration, and hope, all of which gives you more energy. You're paying extra attention at meetings. You're engaging with colleagues and customers. You're noticing the details. You're jumping in with new ideas. You're doing everything better. Nearly everyone can match. Sadly, many people feel stuck in boring and meaningless jobs, experiencing nothing of Genevieve's enthusiasm and excitement. So, is she one of the fortunate few? Where can you get a job that provides passion and purpose? To answer these questions, we returned to our data to locate those special workplaces where people report high levels of passion and purpose. Guess what? There were no truly special workplaces. We found that nearly every industry or occupation boasted at least some people who reported lots of passion and purpose. The idea that only certain industries and jobs allow for passion and purpose is a myth. Consider passion. Sure, there are some major differences. Healthcare workers were more excited about their jobs than construction workers, for instance, and salespeople tended to love their jobs more than strategic planners. Yet we found passionate people in all kinds of jobs and industries, with no industry or job type coming in below 10%. You don't hear much about passionate truck drivers or store clerks or call center employees, but as our data indicate, they're out there. Likewise, many people think that employees who work at large bureaucratic companies struggle more to find passion in their jobs than those who work at smaller companies, and that passion wanes the longer they stay in a job. Wrong. Neither company size nor the number of years on the job had much bearing on how much people loved their work. Our preconceptions about purposeful jobs are inaccurate, too. We think that more mundane or menial jobs can't contain purpose. And indeed, some research has shown that many people don't find low-paying service jobs meaningful. But other research has revealed the opposite, that some people can and do derive a sense of purpose from even the most menial, low-status tasks. As Yale School of Management professor Amy Reznewski discovered in her study of hospital janitors, some found their jobs highly meaningful. In their eyes, they weren't simply cleaning floors. They were caring for patients and helping their families during their times of need. Our study found a big spread across industries in the percentage of people who felt they were contributing to society. About 40% of those working in healthcare did, for instance, as opposed to only 3% of those working in industrial products or services. Yet many people in our data set who didn't work in the more obviously meaningful sectors felt a strong sense of purpose. 28% of people working in the construction industry completely agreed with the statement, "I feel that my work makes contributions to society beyond just making money." Some of them built homes for families. Others built hospitals, schools, or other buildings with a public benefit. All of this data adds up to some pretty good news. If people have found passion and purpose in nearly every corner of the economy, then chances are you can find it in your job too. You don't have to quit your job or leave your company in a risky quest to search for passion and purpose. In fact, As our case studies show, there are three steps in particular you can take to find and grow your passion and purpose while staying in your organization. Hunt for a new role. Between 2001 and 2011, Stephen Birdsall rose rapidly within SAP, the $22 billion in sales German software giant. By the summer of 2011, however, he was feeling restless. He had served in multiple chief operating officer, COO, roles and was now SAP's corporate COO for sales. These back-end administrative positions were satisfying, but something was missing. For a year, he pondered his next career move. Sure, he could stay in his current job and work to improve it bit by bit. Alternatively, he could go into a regional executive role and sell SAP software. He knew he would be good at that, too. Birdsall challenged himself to pinpoint what excited him most about his work. He realized that he longed to sit down with customers, engage, find out how software could help them, negotiate, bond, laugh a bit, feel the adrenaline that comes with closing a deal, delight customers with the follow-up, and create a lasting relationship. And he had another passion he yearned to explore. He had long thrived on developing new ventures from scratch and making them successful. Earlier in his career, while working in sales for the ATM manufacturer Diebold, he had taken existing products and applied them in new commercial markets outside the core banking markets. As Birdsall recalled, the entrepreneurial nature of the job felt electrifying. His current job had not tapped this passion, nor would traditional sales leadership roles. As his year of introspection at SAP dragged on, Birdsall felt stuck. He was not going to find a job at his company that would let him harness both his sales and entrepreneurial passions. But quitting SAP and going to a startup would mean taking a huge risk, like pursuing Oprah's mantra of follow your passion without any realistic possibility of success. If he stayed at his current job, he would be ignoring his passion. Neither option appealed to him. Day after day, week after week, Birdsall turned this dilemma over in his head. He thought through his options again and again. There had to be some solution. Finally, an epiphany came to him. What if he stayed at SAP and developed a new business? At the time, SAP's customers were craving software systems that wouldn't cost tens of millions of dollars and take years to bring online. SAP had an answer, a simplified off-the-shelf product it had developed called Rapid Deployment Solutions, RDS. Demand for this product existed, but the sales department hadn't yet championed it. The person who could build this business would make a substantial contribution, and Birdsall thought he was just the one. He did wonder whether it was worth the risk to leave his global COO role, but after further reflection, he decided it was. Quite frankly, he told me in one of our interviews, it's what I'm passionate about. I really enjoy building new businesses from scratch, taking product to market. It's been like that from the time I was in high school. After so many months of anguish, Birdsall had decided. He presented a plan to SAP's board about what to do with the RDS business. The board endorsed it. Birdsall's boss, the president of SAP, asked him to take ownership of RDS. Ditching his COO responsibilities, Birdsall refocused all his energy on a single goal, making RDS a success. He hired a new team of experienced risk-takers and traveled to meet with hundreds of customers in countries all over the world, racking up hundreds of thousands of air miles along the way. His all-in efforts paid off. Within 2.5 years, RDS mushroomed beyond anyone's expectations, achieving $1.3 billion in annual revenue. Like Birdsall, you can seek opportunities within your existing company to merge your passion with a strong sense of purpose. But be prepared. It takes work. Even though Birdsall's career move may seem straightforward in hindsight, it emerged out of months of contemplation on his part. He explored dozens of options before finding a good fit. He refused to settle until he found his match. Many people assume that finding the right role, as Birdsall did, is the only way to find passion or purpose or both on the job. In one study, 70% of working adults reported that they thought they could only find passion at work if their job fit them perfectly from the outset. They neglected the possibility that they could develop their passion in their current job. Let's examine how you can better match passion and purpose within the job you already have. Grow your circle of passion. Here's a short quiz. On a scale of 1 to 7, use the scale that follows to rate the following statement. I am passionate about my job because I very much enjoy doing my tasks every day. Completely agree, a score of 7. Strongly agree, 6. Somewhat agree, 5. Neither agree nor disagree, 4. Somewhat disagree, 3. Strongly disagree, 2. Completely disagree, 1. How did you do? As we found in our research, some people equated passion with the specific tasks they perform on the job, helping a patient, selling a product, designing a strategy. How well they did at the task didn't matter. It was the pleasure of the task itself that counted. Such people feel what academics call intrinsic motivation. Unfortunately, intrinsic motivation is uncommon. When we analyzed our data, we found that fewer than 15% of people in our data set completely agreed with the statement, "I feel that the actual work I do is rewarding in and of itself." For most of us, the actual work may be somewhat rewarding, but not that rewarding. So, are most of us doomed to plod through our current jobs, unhappy and uninspired? Not at all. Our research turned up other sources of passion besides the specific work tasks we do. Break out that 1 to 7 scale again and rate the following. I am passionate about my job because I relish the experience of achieving results and success. Achievement passion. I am passionate about my job because I am energized around the creative aspect of my work. Creative passion. I am passionate about my job because I adore working and socializing with my colleagues. People passion. I am passionate about my job because it affords me the opportunity to learn and grow professionally and personally. Learning passion. I am passionate about my work because it gives me the opportunity to do what I do best every day. Competence passion. For some of us, the exhilaration that comes with achieving success matters a lot. In our study, just shy of 20% of people completely agreed with the statement, I feel good about my job because it allows me to experience success. Not surprisingly, people in traditionally competitive fields such as sales took more pleasure in achievement-based passion. The ability to create something also excited some people in our study. 46-year-old Karen, leader of a team that provides HR software solutions for companies, reported feeling deeply passionate about her job's opportunity to be innovative. If you've ever built anything completely from scratch, it's an amazing experience because all the things that you take for granted as being there are no longer there. You have to build it piece by piece, and along with that building comes this huge flexibility for being, you know, artistic and creative with what you're doing. A different source of passion at work is what we might call people passion. We relish the deeper relationships we form at work, the sense of being cared for. Sophia, a 30-year-old financial analyst in our study, reported how really kind and generous the colleagues in her office were. I just had a major life event happen, and everyone was beyond supportive of me. People would come over and just check in and see how I'm doing on a daily basis. And that just provides a sense of care. Another dimension of passion we encountered in our study involved the passion that can come from learning and developing professionally. A full 56% of people were enthusiastic about their job because it gave them a chance to learn and grow. Finally, we have what we can call competence-based passion. You love your work because it taps into your strengths. You might recognize the last statement as the one used in the Strengths Finder approach to matching your strengths with your job. Such passion may emerge. You become very good at a job, and that, in turn, fuels your passion. The stove turns from cold to hot. Passion at work is an expanding circle that encompasses all six areas. Joy doing the tasks, excitement at succeeding, the thrill from unleashing one's creative energy, enthusiasm from being with people at work, delight from learning and growing, and elation from doing one's job well. A work activity can tap into one or more of these sources of passion. For 2 years, as we worked on our book, Great by Choice, my co-author Jim Collins and I held weekly phone calls that we called Chimposiums, after the monkey character Curious George. I thoroughly enjoyed those calls, and reflecting on it now, I know it was because they tapped into four sources of passion. Intrinsic, I enjoyed the task of discussing and brainstorming the topics. Creative, I felt happy to be creating new insights. Developmental, I was learning. And social, I enjoyed doing it with my good friend Jim. Go back and review your answers to the previous statements. Consider how you might bolster your feelings of passion across each of the six dimensions. Look for a task that requires creative problem-solving. Seek out a customer-facing activity to experience the thrill of success. Attend a training seminar to learn a new skill. Make sure you get invited to brainstorming meetings. Sign on to competitive projects like a sales pitch against a competitor, or if not that, join that department's softball team. Ask your boss to assign you a stretch goal to challenge yourself. Seek ways to spend more time working with people you like and admire. Avoid colleagues who sap your energy. Identify the most passion-sapping task you have and find a way to get out of it. Seek to become really excellent in one job activity. If you tap more passions and go deeper into each one, you will become more motivated and inject more energy into every hour of work. That, in turn, will improve your performance and make it easier for you to find a passion-purpose match. Climb the purpose pyramid. Another way to maximize your passion-purpose match is to infuse your present job with more purposeful activities. Let's remember the key difference between passion and purpose. Passion is doing what you love. Purpose is doing what contributes. So how can you increase your contributions to others? My research uncovered three distinct ways of approaching purpose at work. I depict them as a pyramid, the purpose pyramid, to indicate a logic of increasing order. The premise of the pyramid is that you should fulfill the first level before moving upward. The higher you climb, the stronger your sense of purpose at work. Contribute value while doing no harm. Value creation forms the foundation of the purpose pyramid. As you'll recall from Chapter 3, redesigning work is about creating value in your job by making contributions to others, such as your company, colleagues, suppliers, and customers. If you produce little or no value, you're not doing purposeful work, period. Think of that engineer at Hewlett-Packard who produced a quarterly report and submitted it on time every time, even though corporate headquarters stopped reading the reports long ago. Although he may have felt passionate about the work, he created zero value and thus served no purpose. Many people conceive of purpose as social contributions alone and not as value added, but they should reconsider. When you create value for your organization, you contribute, and your work has purpose. Recall Hartmut Goeritz from Chapter 3, the manager who turned around the container terminal in Tangier, Morocco. His actions contributed to the operational efficiency and quality of the terminal and to the profits of the company. He created value. Purpose it is. Yet you have to be careful about how you add value. If your work harms other people, that harm cancels out the value you add, draining your work of purpose. Consider the car company General Motors. In 2003, GM's car engineers put the finishing touches to a new model, the Cobalt. It turned out that a little piece of metal, the ignition switch, malfunctioned while the car was driving. The airbags would not deploy in a crash because the car's system considered the engine to be off. Engineers detected this problem as early as 2004, but took no remedial action. The results were devastating. On July 29, 2005, the year after engineers knew about the malfunction, 16-year-old Amber Marie Rose died when the red Cobalt she was driving smashed into a tree without the airbag deploying. Only in 2014, 9 years after Amber Marie's death, did GM recall the Cobalts. By 2015, the faulty ignition switch had been linked to 124 deaths. Did GM employees and managers contribute in a positive way back in 2004? In a strictly economic sense, yes. By foregoing an expensive recall for several years, they helped produce profits by keeping costs down. They created economic value, yet this value came at the expense of drivers of the cars. If we only define purpose as giving to others, we miss a crucial distinction. You can contribute to one group, yet damage another. Contribute to General Motors, yet harm young Amber Marie Rose. A strong sense of purpose only arises when you don't harm anyone. Customers, suppliers, your boss, your organization, employees, the community, the environment. To achieve more purposeful work, avoid associating yourself with products, services, and practices that harm others. Better yet, work hard to change products and practices that are causing harm, even on a small scale. If you're a physician, take extra care before ordering a potentially harmful test. If you're in sales, don't push products on people who don't need them. If you're a boss, stop berating your staff, recognizing the damage it can do to their emotional health. Even small changes can help others while also enabling you to find more purpose on the job. Consider one person we interviewed in our study. Ofer Colton runs a one-person business cleaning carpets in the homes of San Francisco. Some years ago, he switched to non-toxic and eco-friendly cleaning products to make sure that his service didn't also damage the environment. It was a small step to reduce harm. He served his customers by cleaning their carpets and helping to keep their homes non-toxic and their environment healthy. His job became more purposeful. Craft personal meaning. Many people stop at the first step in the purpose pyramid. Among the managers and employees we surveyed, 36% contributed value in their job, but didn't climb further. That's too bad. If you're already adding significant value and you're not causing harm to the wider world, then you can continue ascending up to higher levels of purpose. Enhance your purpose-passion match by taking the next step, crafting personal meaning. The meaning we attach to our jobs varies considerably. Two individuals can have the same job with only one feeling that it is of any consequence. In a 2009 study of zookeepers, researchers found that some saw cleaning cages and feeding animals as a filthy, meritless job, while others saw it as a moral duty to protect and provide care for the animals. Same job, different feelings of purpose. Or take car rental clerks. Samantha, a 43-year-old participant in our study, works at a car rental branch in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She gave her job a 7. Completely agree on the statement, "I feel that my work makes contributions to society beyond just making money." That sounds strange. She rents out cars and feels her job benefits society? Come on. Well, she sees it differently. As she told us, her job held purpose for her because she could help people who had gotten into accidents and whose cars were in for repair. When they rent a car, they're not stranded, she says. They have a vehicle to drive. I feel good about providing that service. Countless other car rental employees plod along, seeing their work as drudgery and wishing for their shift to end. Again, same job, different feelings of purpose. What matters, as far as purpose on the job is concerned, is how each individual feels about his or her own work. As long as people are contributing value in their job, it's up to each individual to determine whether they see their work as purposeful. To progress up the purpose pyramid, take steps to feel that what you're contributing is meaningful. You can do this in your current job by reframing its meaning. The hospital janitors in Reznewski's study identified meaningful moments on the job. A janitor named Jason took it upon himself to start talking to patients to brighten their mood. Usually every morning I have to knock on the door. I'll just say, housekeeping, is it okay if I clean your room? And if they can talk, they say yes, and I'll just talk to some of them that want to talk. Just somebody to talk to. Every now and then one might say, well, I'm glad to see your smiling face. As Jason cleaned, he livened up patients' moods. This, in turn, conferred a sense that he was contributing. It gave him purpose. The top of the pyramid. Seek a strong social mission. There are few more horrible deaths than that wrought by cystic fibrosis, CF. The disease is incurable. It kills its mainly young victims slowly by saturating their lungs with thick mucus. Eventually, those stricken with the disease suffocate. For the longest time, a diagnosis of CF meant a rapid death sentence. But over the last several decades, doctors have pioneered therapies that can lengthen a patient's life for decades. In a 2004 New Yorker article titled The Bell Curve, Atul Gawande described the work of Warren Warwick, a doctor of pediatric pulmonology at the University of Minnesota, who became one of cystic fibrosis's greatest adversaries. During the 1960s, Warwick realized that he could lengthen the life of a child diagnosed with CF by finding ways to clear the kid's lungs. But Warwick wasn't interested in merely doing the best possible job with the technologies available at the time. He was determined to try every possible angle, and he did. In ensuing decades, he developed a new toolkit of therapies, new stethoscopes with special bells attached to track the symptoms, a chest-thumping vest used to break up the mucus in the lungs so that it could be coughed up, and even a new technique for coughing that allowed more mucus to make its way out of a patient's lungs. What Warwick found over time was that making small changes on the margins could improve each patient's lung capacity. At a glance, improving a patient's lung capacity from 99.5% to 99.95% didn't appear so significant. But in reality, it made a huge difference. Over the course of a year, it dropped a patient's odds of getting sick from 83% to 16%. For a kid living with CF, those reduced odds could increase his or her life expectancy. As Warwick's methods spread to others in his field, his contributions helped lift the life expectancy of this dreadful disease from about 10 years in the 1960s to nearly 40 years by 2013. Warwick maintained a strong sense of social mission, the highest level in the purpose pyramid, throughout his career. To assess whether you have climbed to the highest level of the purpose pyramid, consider how strongly you agree with this statement. My work makes a strong contribution to society beyond making money. Very few of the 2,000 self-report employees in our survey, 17%, said they completely agreed with that statement. Those who did, however, performed better than those who didn't. They channeled their energy toward a greater social mission and labored more intensely, allowing them to achieve more every day they were on the job. Whenever possible, seek out assignments and tasks that contribute socially, even just a little. Help your bosses understand ways to make a difference that they may have missed. And if you're a manager, find opportunities for your team to give back. In 2005, when Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast, a number of health organizations sent teams to help desperate storm victims. One of them was California-based Scripps Health, which mobilized a medical response team it had created for the first time. As CEO Chris Van Gorder recounted, the effort galvanized the entire organization and created a new sense of pride in working at Scripps. Even employees at this large and formerly embattled healthcare company, who previously might not have felt a strong sense of purpose in their jobs, wrote that they did now. One executive assistant described having shed tears of pride and gratefulness for the courageous and selfless efforts of all the Scripps disaster relief team. Scripps's managers helped their employees climb to the top of the purpose pyramid. Many people experience a sense of emptiness because their job doesn't seem to serve a clear social purpose. But as the pyramid suggests, purpose at work isn't just about reaching the top level of contributing to society. It also includes adding value and finding personal meaning. If you lack a clear social mission at work, you can still discover purpose in your job by looking further down the pyramid. Try to craft activities that add more value and that also carry personal meaning. Inspire yourself and others. Achieving a match between passion and purpose, P squared, is a smart way to work. Feeling passionately about what you do and making valuable contributions boosts your motivation. It charges you up to make the most of every hour you work. That extra energy translates into better performance. You can infuse your job activities with both passion and purpose by using the three techniques I've described: selecting a new role, enlarging your circle of passion, and climbing the purpose pyramid. As you craft more passion and purpose into work, try shifting the metric in your mind from hours worked per week to energy per hour. Count the number of hours in a day in which you had high energy. Watch that number rise as you feel more passion and purpose. Watch your output per hour increase as well, especially if you follow the other practices we discussed in chapters 2, 3, and 4. As you infuse your work with passion and purpose, try channeling that energy into a few focus areas, do less than obsess, that provide value, redesign for value, and that you keep on improving. Learning loop. P squared is the fuel, the energy, that makes all this intense effort and concentration possible. It's how you can inspire yourself to become great at work. And once you have inspired yourself, you can inspire other people so that they will support your plans and goals. It is to this topic that we now turn. Key insights. P squared. The work harder convention. Follow your passion at all costs and no matter how hard you work. If you do what you love, success will come. Conversely, if you ignore passion, you're setting yourself up for a career that is bleak, unsatisfying, and filled with drudgery. The new work smarter perspective. Passion is key, but doing only what you love is bad advice. It can lead to failure and ruin. The best course is to strive to match passion with a strong sense of purpose, to aim for P squared. People who do so unleash a tremendous amount of energy that they apply to every hour on their job. They don't work the most hours. They work smart by aiming for the most effort per hour of work. Key points. Many people either follow their passion or they ignore their passion, but as our research shows, the issue of achieving passion at work is not a matter of following or ignoring, but rather of matching. In our study, managers and employees who matched passion and purpose performed far better than those who didn't. They were likely to place 18 percentile points higher than those who didn't in our 5,000-person dataset. People with a strong sense of both passion and purpose are more energized, getting more done in each hour of work, and they don't work many extra hours. There are three ways to expand your passions and sense of purpose. Discover a new role. You can likely find that match right where you are. You don't have to leap to another profession. Seek a new role within your existing organization that better taps your passions and gives you a stronger sense of purpose. Expand the circle of passion. Feeling passionate about work isn't just about taking pleasure in the work itself. Passion can also come from success, creativity, social interactions, learning, and competence. Expand your circle of passion by tapping into these dimensions. Climb the purpose pyramid. Find ways to add more value from Chapter 3, taking care that your contributions don't cause harm. Second, pursue activities that are personally meaningful, no matter what others think. It helps to reframe one's job to experience the significance it might just hold for you. Third, pursue activities that have a clear social mission. Part 2. Mastering Working with Others. 6. Forceful Champions. I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. Maya Angelou. You know those flashes of insight that come to you out of nowhere, like when you're standing in line or showering? Back in 1999, during the height of the dot-com boom, a young sales manager at Dow Chemical named Ian Telford had one such epiphany. Other salespeople at the time dreamed of hawking clothing, concert tickets, or hotel rooms online, but not Telford. He wanted to sell an industrial substance called epoxy online. Dow had long sold epoxy by the ton to large companies, but new online marketplaces were cropping up that would allow customers to find cheap epoxy providers. Think Amazon.com for business transactions. Telford thought that Dow could create such a site called eepoxy.com, sell its epoxy there at lower prices with no frills, and appeal to a new market segment of smaller customers. From another angle, this strategy seemed foolhardy, even crazy. If the same epoxy was available online at lower prices, what would stop Dow's existing customers from buying it cheaper there? Telford thought he knew. As he told me in interviews for our study, and as he related in an IMD Business School case by Professor Bala Chakravarti, larger customers liked Dow's existing high-touch sales process. If they needed technical support or changes to existing orders, all they had to do was call their dedicated salesperson. By contrast, the new online business wouldn't offer any frills and have strict business rules and order penalties. Dow could pursue two different models for two different kinds of customers, one first class, the other economy. Telford brought his idea to his leadership team. His argument was solid, he thought. Yet the leadership team hated it. 9 out of 12 members voted no. The leaders didn't think that our big customers would pay more for high-touch service, Telford explained. They'd take the lower price offered online. Telford saw his boss's rejection as typical of the company's risk-averse culture. They didn't want to change what was already working. Why should they? There's a quote that people used to say, "Dow is a company where everyone can say no, and no one can say yes." Accomplished in karate and extreme rock climbing, Telford didn't buckle under a challenge. He asked his manager for a second chance and was granted 3 months to draft a better plan. Reflecting on his boss's reaction, Telford thought about his proposal from the leader's perspective. They worried about pricing, and maybe they had a point. If a buyer at a large customer saw a lower price online, he or she would feel cheated. Imagine how a frequent flyer would react upon discovering that he'd paid twice the price for his airplane ticket than the first-time passenger seated next to him. Pondering this problem, Telford dreamt up a nifty solution. What if the prices Dow showed online were higher than those available to their existing key customers. In that case, large customers wouldn't complain. They would say, well, those internet customers are paying a lot for their epoxy, but I'm getting first-class service. Telford also proposed that eepoxy.com offer a promo code for the new, smaller customers to enter online, allowing them to access a lower price or take part in special offers. Everyone would be